The growing edge is all around us. You might have noticed that the service today relies heavily on the metaphor of a tree. The leaves are growing up and out, the roots are growing down and deep, and the tree is expanding its rings. And we have to attend to the whole, or the balance will become so off that the tree can't stand or can't grow. This month, I've talked about trust. And I've tried each week to find things for us to hold on to as we navigate these difficult times of loss and fear and confusion and rage and sadness. I think there is a power in staying present and looking to our own hearts, but there's also a power in remembering our past. And so today I want to share a couple of stories about that power of remembering, about the roots that sustain us as Unitarian Universalists, and how they're also a part of what we can trust in and pull from as we navigate these times. The writer Utah Phillips said, "The long memory is the most radical idea in the country. It is the loss of that long memory which deprives our people of that connective flow of thoughts and events that clarifies our vision, not of where we're going, but where we want to go." And the Reverend Jan Carlson Bull wrote, Love is knotted and gnarled like an old tree with roots that relentlessly inform how deeply we can trust and how freely we forgive. I have at times over the past year talked about the distant history of Unitarianism and Universalism, and both of those deserve a much, much deeper dive. But today I want to talk about a more recent edge, the dying and being born of two denominations into one. Unitarian Universalism, as it exists now, is so young. Just 1961, we merged. And yet, like our church here in Belfast, which is also only 30 years old, it is strong and rich, and to me, it feels much older, much deeper than linear time might suggest. I find that there's something in that to rest in, knowing what we have come from and through. There's something to trust in the way that we've survived and evolved. So much of the two stories I want to share with you are not my own words this morning. Sometimes others just simply say it better than I can. So here it is told by the Reverend John Cummins, the consolidation of Unitarianism and Universalism. When the American Unitarian Association and the Universalist Church of America finally merged on May 12, 1961, there was a total of 141,685 members and 895 congregations. There are now 2,000 congregations, and I am going to blank on the numbers, over 400,000 UUs. America's leading religious journal at that time, which was the Christian Century, called it the most thorough sounding of views of a religious people in modern times. And as well it might be, because after plebiscite, meeting after meeting after meeting, members of every congregation everywhere over a period of several years were solicited for their views, and you can imagine they did express themselves. One Back Bay Unitarian matron was heard to sniff that Universalists were nothing but Baptists who could read. And Universalists complained that Unitarians didn't feel that they'd had a good sermon unless they almost couldn't understand it themselves. Now, Universalism is a populist movement. It swept westward with the Great American Migration of the 19th century, and Unitarians, but for a few Western outposts, remained largely in New England. Yet for more than a century, they shared a lot of things. They shared many of the same ministers and views. You might have heard of Thomas Starr King, who was a Universalist minister in New Hampshire, and he was one of the first to hold fellowship in both movements. Both movements were Unitarian in belief. Both movements suffered the ravages of a world war and the Great Depression. And then two young ministers were called to lead and revitalize their movements, Frederick Elliott from St. Paul, Minnesota, and John's father, John Cummins' father, Robert Cummins from Pasadena, California, 1937 and 1938. They had headquarters directly across the street from one another, and they immediately saw a need to collaborate. And so then was formed the Council of Liberal Churches, Incorporated. It became a reality in 1953. Now, 1937 to 1953. It takes a long time. But that was the first full organic merger to be taken. First full step towards the organic merger to be taken. And as, again, we are good UUs, it took another 8 years of discussion before anything actually happened. In poll after poll, the desperate merger commission sent out more than 140,000 pieces of literature. Now imagine this. That's like 140,000 emails, only there was no email. 140,000 pieces of literature. There were differences between Unitarians and Universalists, both organizational and theological. The Unitarians thought Universalists were poor, but they weren't. Their money was simply held in state conventions. The Universalists thought the Unitarians were rich. They were, but they still deny it. No. They held all their money in Boston. That was a little... Okay. Universalists tended to be viewed as conservative, which is interesting, but it was they who launched an experimental Charles Meeting House across from the stately, staid old Arlington Street Church. And Unitarians were seen as radical, but it was they whose national journal was called the Christian Register. Everyone feared the loss of their own identity and their own understanding. And while the simple name of United Liberal Church might have seemed logical, it was clear that no one was going to give up their name. And thus, we are strapped with this appellation, Unitarian Universalist, which makes it very hard to write on checks and say. And so we have, at least among ourselves, found a way to call ourselves UUs and all of the wonderful U's that go along with that. But it's the story within the stories that are often the most interesting. In the Faith Like a River curriculum put out by the UUA, they tell this story about the consolidation, that final meeting where it was all supposed to happen. As the consolidation neared, feelings were running really high. Polling showed that most Unitarians and Universalists were really in favor of the merger, but some holdouts still questioned its advisability. Would we lose our resources? Would we be taking money and people away from already struggling churches? Would it mean that we would have less of a presence in communities? What would each denomination give up of its character, its values, its traditions? All of these doubts came to a boil in New York, Syracuse, New York, in 1959, where approximately 1,000 delegates gathered to vote on the plan to consolidate. After a short time together, the Universalists and the Unitarians broke into separate rooms in order to consider the plan. And the agreement was that each group would find, if they found something that required an amendment in the agreement, they would propose that amendment and send it to the other group for their consideration, because they all had to agree, because we believe in a democracy. Not everyone had to agree. Majority rules. There were 57 amendments sent back and forth between these two groups. I just want to imagine that you're the runner going back and forth between these rooms. Both groups had to agree to the same plan. The most contentious point, and the only one that brought the assembly to a complete halt, was the wording of the purposes and objectives of the yet-to-be association. The wording the commission first proposed read like this: to cherish and spread the universal truths taught by the great prophets and teachers of humanity in every age and tradition, immemorially summarized in their essence as love to God and love to man. Now, the Universalist delegation overwhelmingly adopted this wording and very happily sent it off to their Unitarian counterparts to do likewise. Mm-hmm. But the Unitarian Assembly, their reaction was intense. From some wanting the clause struck entirely because it came too close to being a creed. At the other end of the spectrum, some Unitarians were offended that the wording made no mention of the religion of Jesus or the Judeo-Christian heritage. So a new version was proposed to cherish and spread the universal truths taught by Jesus and other great teachers of humanity in every age and tradition and prophetically expressed in the Judeo-Christian tradition as love to God and love to man. Now, this set off a debate of the very nature of Unitarianism. It was a debate that went back to the 19th century, which was this: did Unitarianism stand firmly in the tradition of Christian churches, or did it offer a new universal religion for all people? Ultimately, the statement they were asked to approve was too narrow to be accepted. So these meetings, well, let me just tell you this. They rewrote it. The wording failed by 7 votes. We are now at 11 p.m. or some god-awful hour of the night. The meetings ran late into the night. There was still no agreement at hand. The assembly and the merger were at a deadlock. And most of the delegates still stayed in their seats. Oh, I love that. The Unitarian Donald Harrington, who was then minister of the Community Church of New York, wrote about that in a journal later. He said, "I felt very discouraged and I went to bed. About 1 o'clock in the morning, someone was pounding on my door. It was Percival Brundage, who was an AUA leader, saying, 'Don, can't we do something about this?' And he showed me wording that he and some others had continued to work on. I said I agreed, but since we'd already lost the vote by 7, how would we do that? How could we get the vote reconsidered?" Percival left. At 3 a.m., the knock on the door came again. And it was another one of the leading Unitarian Christians. And he said, "Don, we've got better wording. Are you still with us?" And he explained that he had persuaded the Universalists to reconsider, which meant that the Unitarians could vote again as well. Now, this is what I'll get you. The new proposal passed with only one word changed. "Our" became "the." And the Unitarian Universalist Association was created to cherish and spread the universal truths taught by the great prophets and teachers of humanity in every age and tradition, immemorially summarized in the Judeo-Christian heritage as love to God and love to man. Now, all of these years later, of course, our principles and purposes have changed dramatically. We've evolved our understanding and shifted our language with the time. Where I find hope in these stories, and what matters most, I think, regarding this particular UU route, are 2 simple truths. One is the line, "The meetings ran late into the night. With no agreement at hand, the assembly and the merger were at a deadlock. Still, most of the delegates stayed in their seats." And even when some, like Donald Harrigan, got discouraged and tired and went to bed, others stayed and kept vigil and kept trying and didn't let others stay out of it, went and got him and brought him back. We are a denomination that stays, even when it's hard. We work things through no matter how long it takes. We don't leave people behind. We know how to take turns. And most strikingly, in our roots, there is proof that even the tiniest of changes, "our" to "thee," can make the biggest differences. And I can't help but think that maybe right now, we are just one small metaphorical word away from peace. All we have to do is stay awake and keep trying. May it be so. Amen.